It's not even officially autumn yet, and it won't be for another week, 12/21 on Wednesday the 22nd, but we are already seeing fall colors start to show up on trees, and people who've been keeping gardens are watching things like their zucchini pile up. Or not. It hasn't been a great growing season in some respects. Early in the pandemic, when many people took up gardening for something to do, we reached out to Jackson County Master Gardeners and found Lynn Kunstman, who now joins us weekly through the growing season to field our many questions on successful gardening. Or not. Lynn, welcome to the Exchange again.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I didn't even thought about to ask for a general overview as we're coming to the end of this this summer growing season. I mean, compared to last year, how would you say your garden has performed?
I would say fewer tomatoes because of that hot spell we had where nothing was, you know, setting fruit for a while in June there. Things were really struggling just to kind of stay alive. And so I've had more eggplant, fewer tomatoes. Peppers are pretty good. But yeah, and the zucchini, of course, it there's no stopping it ever, regardless of what the conditions are.
I really expect to see relentless somewhere in the Latin name for zucchini.
Really? Yeah. I would say just for us, but also we grew fewer tomato vines this year, so that probably has something to do with it as well.
So you made some plans for a harder season or less water or something?
No, you know, we actually upped our water delivery to the garden because we irrigate with weepy pipe, which is, you know, it's just a porous mm-hmm. sort of pipe that oozes across the garden beds. And as the years go by, the older it gets, the more clogged with sediment from the water that's incoming. Uh-huh. There's still some mineral content in the water that's going out into the garden and it clogs those little pores, and so we end up having to run the sprinkler for longer. So in terms of how much it's delivering, I really don't know. But, we give it enough water so that things stay alive and produce fruit.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because I think you also you live in town in Medford, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. so same water system we're on in Talent, and I forget sometimes using city water that I might be a lot more careful if I got water from a well, and I have to believe that's been an issue for some gardeners this year.
Oh, man, yeah. Many, many wells in the valley are going dry this year due to the drought. I mean, we have a lowering water table. Whenever we have fewer rains, the water table is affected because those rains have to percolate down through the soil into the aquifers that we have available here. And there's a higher demand now. We have a lot of agricultural crops here in the valley, uh-huh. A lot of big, you know, cannabis grows that are straining the water system. So I've heard lots of reports of wells going dry, wells having to be deepened. Our well out at the extension has gone dry, and so we can't irrigate out there. We had to do an emergency save of our native plant, all of our nursery plants, and have people to either take them home or take them to be fostered until we get the well deepened, or have them donated to restoration projects around the valley that can keep those plants alive until they put them out in winter. So, yeah, our nursery is now empty.
Wow. So what about the demonstration garden and all that stuff?
Well, the demonstration garden, because of lower daytime temperatures and because those plants are in the ground, most of them can still access the residual soil moisture that's there. But with the nursery stock in pots, you know, 24 hours in 90-degree heat, that's a death sentence. So, without water. So we had to save the plants that were in containers. But most of the stuff that's in the ground should be okay. Shallow-rooted things are going to suffer, you know, because we don't have irrigation out there and won't for another couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. So. Wow. So,
yeah,
so
are you, grim.
How many different people had to take the nursery stock home to be able to,
you know, I don't even know how many were out there. I was, taking care of family stuff but enough people that the entire nursery, when I went out later in the day, after I sent out the emergency email, all of the nursery stock, most of the nursery stock was gone. I had to pick up a few flats of stuff that were under screens, but, No, it all got picked up. It was an amazing Herculean effort, and people really rallied and took stuff to take care of.
So, oh, that's great. So everybody got together and got the nursery stock saved.
Yeah, they just came out and cleaned it all out.
Lynn Kunzman's back on the Jefferson Exchange to answer our questions about gardening. She is one of the master gardeners of Jackson County with the Jackson County Master Gardeners Association. If you have a question, a concern, an issue, something you've wondered about in gardening or even never made a garden and want some ideas on how to get started, we have it all right here in the brain of Lynn Kunzman. You can join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. You know, Lynn, when I compile questions for you for the week, but not only the stuff that we get coming in off the phones and emails, but I just look around at other stuff that other people are saying in gardening. And in some of the places I go, man, they sure lay on the lawn activities in September. Is this like the month of putting in lawns or something?
Yeah, sure. Because fall is a great time to put in a lawn if that's what you're going to do. And I hope you don't. It's also a great time to take out your lawn. Turf, the turf industry is huge here in Oregon. Let's face it. We grow most of the grass seed for the country. And so, it's a giant industry. And and putting in a lawn in fall makes sense because the weather is getting cooler. You have to keep a lawn wet, when you seed a lawn. You have to keep that seed bed watered. Mm-hmm. And so with cooler temperatures, the grass will still come up. And then theoretically, the rains will start and you won't have to irrigate every day. And then it goes dormant. Once it's up and growing in through October and November, then it goes dormant through the winter and it has time to establish its roots. And, it's a really good time to start a lawn if that is what
You are not an advocate for lawns. We just need to underscore
absolutely
that. But
not.
Other things that people can do. I mean, this is also a good time if you're looking to take out a lawn. I mean, what kinds of things would you replace it with, and how detailed the process is that? Is this like a weekend process?
I mean, the technique I recommend, and you can look at this online. You just look up sheet mulching a lawn. Online, and there are great videos on how to do that. You just, you cap off your sprinkler heads on the lawn, the section of lawn you want to remove. You lay down a couple layers of cardboard and make sure the edges overlap so you're killing off all the lawn under that cardboard. And on top of that, you put down 3 to 4 inches of bark mulch.
Yeah, let me underscore 3 to 4 inches. Don't be a cheapskate like I was and put down 2 because your cardboard comes out.
That's right. The cardboard then gets exposed, and so underneath that 3 to 4 inches of bark mulch, the cardboard will decompose as it kills off the lawn. So you want to leave your old turf there because it has, it's a living part of the soil, and you want that just to become part of the life of the soil. You don't want to scrape off the top 6 inches by cutting the turf away and removing mm-hmm. all that good material. So, and then you leave that for like 6 months, let it overwinter and the rains fall on it and keep it wet and decomposing. And then in the spring, you can, in the meantime, you want to have a plan for what you want to replace there, what plants you want to put in. Have somebody, if you're not a designer, have somebody design a garden for you. I recommend native plants, of course. And then you can just dig a hole through that bark, pull the bark mulch back. The cardboard will be decomposed or mostly so. Dig down, put your plants in, and it's already mulched. So you've got, you've got your garden space all ready to go.
Okay, so you do your prep work now, basically. But that's really interesting.
Yeah.
When we talk about taking out a lawn, though, it's not physically taking it out. You're just overlaying it.
Sheet mulching is really the simplest, fastest, easiest way to go. Yeah.
All right. We have an email. That's right. From last week from Diana and Talent, who wrote, I wonder how many homeowners and businesses would voluntarily cut water to lawns or at least cut down if they knew how many gallons of water go to lawns in a day, in a month, in a year.
Right.
Diana writes, as a culture, we've been slow to grasp how much water is wasted on lawns we water and mow religiously. When I lived in Vermont in the 70s, many people were talking about the environmental cost of lawns. Here in the dry West, she lives in Talladega, she points out, in one of two houses in a block standing after the Alameda Drive fire. She said, most of my neighbors rebuilt this year and put in lawns without thinking of different possibilities. One step, putting out the idea of how attractive vegetables can be even in the front yard. Time was, homeowners associations wouldn't allow veggies in a front yard, and people went along with the ridiculous idea, Diana writes. She asks, isn't it time to think about conservation, drought, the planet, and now that the media have finally acknowledged what Homeland Security knew in the 80s, that climate change is real and that it will require major change? Thanks for considering, writes Diana in Talent.
I couldn't agree more, and I think people either need to be growing food or native plants in their yards. I'm kind of hardcore. I'm kind of a zealot here. I do have to admit. I just don't think we have time or the wherewithal to withstand not doing those things. I think food for humans and native plants to support the insects that support our food webs, and to save the potable water that's coming into our homes. You're irrigating with potable water in most urban areas and mm-hmm. suburban areas. Where I'm putting drinkable water out on my yard, which is crazy, you know. I think that municipalities should incentivize people to remove lawns, to put in gray water systems, to put in rain catchment systems, all the things that we can do that we know how to do to conserve water, because this is in this valley especially, this is a critical issue for us.
Yeah, it really is, and it gets more so all the time, as you just pointed out, even running with your well dry at the Southern Oregon Research and Extension Center.
Absolutely. Everywhere around the valley, you know, people mm-hmm. are losing their wells, and if they were using their gray water from their homes, if they were using a rain catchment system that stored the water, the rainwater that came off their roofs, or even allowed that to percolate into the ground around their homes, rather than run down into storm drains and out into the creeks. That would be immensely helpful in terms of preserving aquifers and building up the water table.
All right, time for another segment on gray water, I can tell. We need to get one of our people back in who knows about that to talk about this. Lynn Kunstman is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange from Jackson County Master Gardeners, providing gardening expertise once a week through growing season. You can join in at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. John and Eugene writes, this year I did an experiment with dry farming. I planted tomato plants in the spring, mulched deeply, and then never watered or weeded. I was sure they would dry up, but to my surprise, they never seemed to suffer for lack of water. My only problem was that the deer ate them. Can you, Lynn, shed some light on the pros and cons of this approach, writes John and Eugene.
Yeah, I think when you're up in the Willamette Valley, which has a higher moisture level than we have here in Southern Oregon, is a very unique, it's more like the western slope of the Sierra Nevada, so it's very hot and dry here. But I'm sure that dryland farming techniques would work here as well if, you know, we had some other things in place. But certainly up in the Willamette Valley, where they get more moisture than we do, and I do know that Oregon State University has a dryland farming program that they are working on. And I think it's a great thing for people to consider and do if it's possible, and to research, Google that stuff. I'm a big advocate of people doing research and teaching themselves via the internet how to get stuff done. And
so no hard feelings if they don't go to a master gardener. You're fine with wherever the information comes from.
I certainly, the master gardeners are going to give you science-based. If you go to OSU and look at their dry land farming program, that's going to give you the best scientific information that you can get. But there are lots of other people out there who do these kinds of things and have experience with them and can give you an idea of what that needs to look like, and then you can research, you know, mm-hmm. for your area specifically. So I'm a big advocate.
Okay. Speaking of OSU, I wanted to thank Erica Sontag again for pinch hitting for you last week. She did a fine job.
Yeah, she did. Yeah, that was great.
Now, an email from Tia from Trail asking, hi, my raspberries were sucked into dry lumps by some sort of wasps. There are a lot of canes for next year. How do I protect the fruit that I hope to get next year from these little brats? Thanks, says Tia.
And I don't know, but once again, I would go to the OSU Extension catalog and look up cane berries, because there are information sheets about very specific insect pests that bother cane berries, and both the fruit and the canes themselves. We have, around here, we have cane borers. They're actually a species of insect that gets into the cane and overwinters in the canes. And so I don't know if that's what she's dealing with or if she's actually having something eat the fruit itself. But she can find out either through, contacting the plant clinic with that question, mm-hmm. Or her local plant clinic through OSU, or going to their website, that OSU Extension Catalog, and searching for cane berries.
Okay, I'll bring the links that we had last week for the plant clinic and the catalog forward into this week's web entry so people can find that at jeffexchange.org. Just look for the smiling picture of Lynn and you're in the right place.
God.
I knew you'd say that. Susan in Ashland echoes a question from, it's maybe the same Sue. We have a phone call about the same thing, but the issue being about bark mulch. And I've heard this from other listeners who really are rather adamant that we stop getting people into bark mulch because of its flammability. So Susan in Ashland writes, we were told by FireWise that bark mulch is extremely flammable. What else could we use to replace our lawn?
Yeah. I suppose you could tear the lawn out and then, plant and put down gravel mulch around your native plants that you're planting or whatever landscape plants that you're planting. The bark mulch, I think if you keep it away from the structures mm-hmm. themselves. It is a problematic thing. I think people in towns like in Medford, where we're surrounded by asphalt and concrete, and it might not be as big an issue. People in rural areas might be more concerned with that. So it's that fine line. And if you use it for the 6 months during the winter, when fire is not, to kill the lawn, mm-hmm. when fire is not an issue necessarily, and then scrape it away when you're ready to landscape and use it out away from your house under your shrubs or mm-hmm. trees or whatever that are out away from the building perimeter. You could use it through the winter as a way of killing the lawn and then remove it once you're ready to plant and use, some kind of gravel or hardscaping mm-hmm. right up next to your building so that you're not increasing your fire risk.
Yeah, I'm looking right at the FireWise stuff. They specify immediate and intermediate zones close to the house. So the immediate zone
exactly.
is 5 feet. So no bark mulch up to the house, certainly.
Right.
5 feet away if you're sticking out of the immediate zone. You could go to 30 feet away if you're trying to keep out of the intermediate zone as well.
Right. So, look at those perimeters that you're setting up around your building. And then choose, and gravel makes a really nice mulch underneath landscape plants if you're actually putting plant material next to the house, or you may just want to put hardscaping up mm-hmm. right around the perimeter of your house if you're in an area that's really high risk.
Okay, so hardscaping being the stuff like the gravel mulch, things like that.
Gravel mulch, mm-hmm. Concrete, those kinds of things right up next to the building itself so mm-hmm. that there's no way for the fire to move. Across that.
Okay. So thank you, Susan, for reminding us about FireWise issues there.
Good question.
And then Patricia in Eureka, Patricia Ann, comes back to the issue of potable water going onto lawns, points out that other uses of potable water include the flush toilet. So, yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's drinkable water. We're flushing down the toilet.
Right. And there are toilets now that are made that have a little basin on top where you finish, you wash your hands and flush, and the gray water from your hand wash is what is, flushing the next toilet flush. And so it's like we do have the technology to do these things. We lack the will.
Yeah, that's a big one. Okay, it's time for it. I'm going to talk to the producers about getting a gray water person in again, so we can
and a rain catchment person too.
Oh yeah, gray water and
there's
rain.
There's no reason people can't be installing rain catchment things on their properties.
Okay. Final question actually came in yesterday from a person who only identifies as Defeated in Talent. Says, this time of year, when you reflect on your successes and or failures during a smoke-filled, drought-driven growing season, what do you drink?
Oh, gin and tonics.
You and me both. Okay, let's make sure we get some limes going for next time.
Yeah, just as long as the lime supply lasts.
All right. Yeah. All right. Turned to lemons, actually, myself. But well, that's a story for a different day. Okay.
Yeah.
Lynn Kunzman joins us weekly through gardening season. I guess that'll last until we get into October. We'll talk about that behind the scenes. But Lynn, always a pleasure to have you on. Your brain is just full of great things to know about vegetation around our houses, whether we want it there or not.
Right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Take it easy. That'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. We'll talk about Occupy Wall Street in hour number two coming up here on JPR. No actual endorsement of alcoholic beverages is implied by the actions of your host. Thanks for listening.